What is up, everybody? It is Roman Gennaro, host of the Empire Sports Talk podcast, and let's get going. Before we jump into sports, I want to wish everybody a happy Star Wars Day. May the 4th be with you to all those who celebrate. You can't really see, let me back up for you. I'm representing today with the Star Wars Abbey Road t-shirt. And with that, let's jump right into sports, but happy Star Wars Day, everybody. First thing I want to talk about is I know I haven't talked a lot about the WNBA and women's sports on this podcast, but Caitlin Clark tends to change things. She made her WNBA debut with the Indiana Fever with the start of the preseason against the Dallas Wings. She had 21 points. They did lose 79 to 76, but she did hit a couple of long three-pointers in that game. She said she felt very, very good with her debut, and more to come from Caitlin Clark. One thing that I do really appreciate about women's sports and the WNBA is the expediency with which things happen. And I know like there's fewer teams and that kind of thing, so that tends to make things go faster. But when you look at the process in women's sports and the WNBA compared to other major sports leagues, it's much, much faster. So with that being said, Caitlin Clark's final game at Iowa was the national championship game against South Carolina on April 7th. And then, one week later, she's drafted first overall in the WNBA draft. And now, 2 weeks after that, she's debuting in the WNBA. So, all told, less than a month between her last college game and her first pro game in the preseason. And that is refreshing when you think about all the excitement surrounding Caitlin Clark, and then when you think about how long it takes for things to happen in other major sports. In the NFL, college football ends in January. They're drafted in April, and the preseason doesn't start till August. That is 7 months of first 3 months of speculating about who's going to get drafted where, what it's going to be. The major sports media pretty much talks about that every day in that time. And that doesn't even count, once we get close to the end of the season, they start talking about the draft pretty early in season as well. And then the players get drafted, which is where we are right now. The players just got drafted last weekend. And now it's like, okay, so how many wins is this team projected? What's their draft report card? When do rookie mini camp start? All this stuff for another 4 months before they play their first preseason game. And that's preseason games. They don't play a lot. A lot of people don't watch the preseason, but I only mentioned the preseason in this segment to put a point on when things begin. And I do believe Caitlin Clark's actual WNBA debut in the regular season is next week. So it'll still be about a month between her last college game and her first regular season pro game. In the NBA, college basketball, March Madness ends in April. The draft is in June, and the preseason again does not start until October. So again, that is a 6 month time period of talking about where people will get drafted, when they'll debut, this kind of stuff. It's a very long time, and I get it, that's the off season. But and then it's a really interesting case in Major League Baseball where they're the only major American sports league that has their draft in the middle of the season. And that's because of the minor league system. For Major League Baseball, the College World Series ends in late June this year. It ends in late June, and that date has fluctuated in the past. Sometimes it ends in mid-June or early June. The MLB draft is in late July this year. There have been times, and I'll give you an example here in a minute, where the player is drafted while they're still playing college baseball. And in that case, you finish your season and then you go. So it's a very unique situation where if the timing works out, the player can still be playing on a college field while they are being drafted. It happened to Dansby Swanson when he was drafted first overall. They had just finished playing, I believe, a College World Series semifinal. And there's video of him standing with his teammates on the field still, because it was like maybe an hour after they finished. They were still standing on the field and they were watching on a phone and they celebrated with Dansby on the field. So the draft this year is in late July, and then those players are immediately sent to a short season spring training. Most of them are. Some of them can be sent to AA or wherever if they're higher rated. But those players get drafted immediately after their college season ends and immediately go to play. But the thing that takes away from the Major League Baseball experience is the minor league system. I do believe other leagues need to implement something like this. I know the NBA had what is now the G League for a long time. It was the D League for a while, which kind of served as the minor leagues to basketball, but it's not quite the same. The D League, before it got all the funding and is now the G League, what it is now, was more of a purgatory. It's like if you get sent down there, we're never going to see you again. And with the G League now, there's a little bit more clout to it, but still, it's like if you're down there, we may or may not see you. And if we do see you, it's probably not going to be a lot. It's probably going to be for a 2-year contract at the end of the season when there's some injuries, and then you might get traded and maybe you'll make it up. We saw an interesting situation where Mac McClung won the NBA slam dunk contest this year when he's done not even playing in the NBA. So it's a very weird thing. I think what could work for the NFL is if the XFL or whatever it is now, the UFL served as a minor league situation, because we've seen players go back and forth from those leagues to the NFL. It would be interesting if the NFL kind of bought them and said you'll serve as like a farm system, some seasoning for players that aren't quite ready for the NFL. Because then I think in Major League Baseball you see fewer busts in terms of high value picks, because with a little bit of seasoning, those high value picks will be ready when they come. And for the lower picks, if you draft a guy in the seventh, eighth round, if he makes it to the major leagues and gives you anything, you're ecstatic. So Major League Baseball is a different breed as far as they get drafted in season. They go play immediately. You might not see him for a few years, if at all. So it's very interesting when you look at all the major American professional sports leagues, and then you look at what the WNBA does. We're like, all right, you're gonna go from playing in college to playing in the show, as it were, playing in the W in less than a month. So talking about the way that Major League Baseball does it, and you're like, well, the top picks now they make it in less than a year and all this stuff. Was like, yes, they do, but sometimes, and is the case with Jackson Holliday this year, they make it, but then they get rushed because they're a top pick and they have to go back down, which is what happened to Jackson Holliday. But only 22 times since the MLB draft began in 1965, only 22 times has a player gone from being drafted straight to the major leagues without playing in the minors at all. And it's only happened 3 times since the year 2000. Xavier Nady did it with the San Diego Padres, Mike Leake in 2010 with the Cincinnati Reds, and Garrett Crochet in as recently as 2020 with the Chicago White Sox. And if you've seen Garrett Crochet pitch recently, wow, he is good. There was a very unique situation in 2014 where Brandon Finnegan became the first player ever to play in the College World Series and the MLB World Series in the same. And this is an example of what I was talking about, getting drafted before your season's even over. So as a timeline for Brandon Finnegan was drafted by the Kansas City Royals in the first round of the MLB draft on June 5th, 2014. The 2014 College World Series, in which Brandon Finnegan's TCU Horned Frogs participated, was June 14th to the 25th. So the entire thing started after the draft. In the College World Series, there is a regional and super regional that starts a few weeks earlier, but the College World Series specifically is the final 8 teams. And this took place a week and a half after the draft. So at this point, Brandon Finnegan was already a Royal, and he was finishing out the season with his team. The World Series took place from the 14th to the 25th. TCU was eliminated from contention on the 19th, so Finnegan reported to the Royals organization. On September First, 2014, less than 3 months after being drafted, Brandon Finnegan made his MLB debut for the Royals and then went on in October to pitch for the Royals in the World Series. The Kansas City Royals would end up losing that season to the San Francisco Giants, but would be back again 1 year later and would take care of business. That was a truly unique experience for Brandon Finnegan. And as you can see, in Major League Baseball, it's not the same as WNBA or the NBA or the NFL or the NHL or any of the other major leagues where you get drafted and go right away. There's a minor league system. It could be a couple of years or more than a couple if you're a later pick. It could be, and there are a lot of times when the player makes his MLB debut for a team that did not draft him. That happens all the time too. So as you can see, it's a very like all of these experiences, all of these draft experiences are very, very different. And I do appreciate the WNBA for making it happen quick. College season ends, draft, WNBA season starts all within a month. When you have somebody as high profile and as exciting as Caitlin Clark, that's what you want to see. Let's stay with the NBA for just a second. The NBA playoffs are going on. The first round is pretty much over. I think the only series left, as we're recording this on Saturday afternoon, is Game 7 between the Cleveland Cavaliers and Orlando Magic. I do think Orlando has a slight advantage in that one, even though the game takes place in Cleveland. And I actually think Vegas has Cleveland as a favorite as well. But the reason I think Orlando is favored in that one is because Cleveland had a 2-0 series lead, and Orlando stormed back to force Game 7 and won pretty resoundingly in all three of their victories, including in Game 6 when Donovan Mitchell dropped 50 points and his team couldn't back him up, and the Magic forced Game 7. So I do think it's going to be a very competitive Game 7, but I would give the edge slightly to Orlando because of the comeback they've had to make. Game 7 is on Sunday. The weird thing about the NBA, this has happened for several years, and it's always been kind of odd to me, is the ability for another round to start while the previous round is still going on. And that's what's happening today as Game 1 between the Denver Nuggets and Minnesota Timberwolves kicks off today on the 4th, while the first round is not complete until tomorrow. I get it. The calendar, money, you want to have a game as often as possible. But it's odd to me. I think you close one chapter before you open another. But the series between Minnesota and Denver will be must-watch basketball, as these are, to me, these are the two favorites to get out of the West. We can't forget about Dallas or Oklahoma City, who will be facing off in the other semifinal. But to me, the two favorites in the conference are Denver and Minnesota. And I kind of like Minnesota, honestly, but we'll see what happens. But what I want to talk about specifically is the fact that Kevin Durant and the Phoenix Suns were swept out of the playoffs by Minnesota. And I don't think anybody really expected Phoenix to win the series, but when you have Kevin Durant, Devin Booker, and Bradley Beal, you expect them to be competitive, and they just were not. And it wasn't a case of Denver versus the Lakers, where Denver won in five, but the Lakers were competitive and the games were close and it was closer than it looked and all the sort of stuff. Minnesota boat raced Phoenix in four games. The average margin of victory for Minnesota was 15 points. Not what Phoenix fans expected when they brought in Bradley Beal and to pair with Devin Booker and Kevin Durant, but there wasn't when that happened, when they traded Chris Paul to make it happen, there were a lot of people that were like, that's not going to be a step up, because we knew that it was three ball-centric little defense playing guys who are at their best with the ball in their hand, and you only have one ball. It was the exact same disaster we had just watched play out in Brooklyn with Harden and Kyrie. in Phoenix. And with this sweep by Minnesota, I think we can clearly say, once and for all, that the Big Three era of NBA basketball is dead. And one of the reasons I think it is that you obviously need a supporting cast. When the Miami Heat started the Big Three era, essentially, and won those championships, they had a bench. They had a great supporting cast. They had depth. Kevin Love, LeBron, and Kyrie did it. They had depth. They had Dellavedova. They had players like that coming up big in moments where the Big Three weren't doing it. And the defense that Dellavedova played in that series was a big X factor against the Warriors' backcourt. That's just one example. But with the way that player salaries and player contracts have increased, it's significantly hard to have even two max players on a roster and build the depth necessary to win a championship. I mean, just look at Minnesota right now. Look at OKC. Minnesota, yes, they have a star in Anthony Edwards. They have a star in Karl-Anthony Towns. They have maybe the best defensive player in the league in Rudy Gobert, but they also have Mike Conley. They also have depth behind them and off the bench. Look at OKC, a bunch of young players who have grown together that are still on their rookie contracts, and then a star in Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and a budding star in Chet Holmgren. And this is how you build a team. And the problem with, yes, LeBron's Lakers won a championship in 2020 in the bubble. The problem that they've had since then has been trying to shoehorn in Carmelo Anthony, trying to shoehorn in Russell Westbrook, trying to do all these things and get all these players on their top line that gives them no stability on the back end. And the problem for the Lakers, even though they played a really good series against Denver, was depth. And the problem for Phoenix, as we knew it going in, we said there's no room for a bench. They don't have anyone else. And look what happened. But the big question mark here, and they've given away all their draft picks to do what they've done. So this is their roster for a while. And Phoenix was living in an era of the NBA that is dead and gone, and they paid the price for it. But the most concerning part was you have an owner that doesn't seem to understand what he just witnessed. Matt Ishbia got up to the podium following the sweep and said, "The narrative that the ship is burning is false, and we're doing great in Phoenix," which prompted Tim Legler to give us one of the best quotes of the year in the NBA when he was on Get Up talking about the Phoenix Suns being swept. And he said, "Matt Ishbia saying that is like the survivors of the Titanic saying it was the best cruise they've ever been on." And that was, not only was it accurate, it was hilarious to hear that, because that's what's happening right now in Phoenix. The ship is sinking, and instead of trying to plug the holes and keep the ship afloat, they're just ignoring the problem. That organization's going down. But props to Tim Legler for giving us one of the best sound bites of the year. I want to stay with the NBA for just a minute. When the Lakers won their only game of the series against Denver, the narrative was, and even before they did, honestly, the narrative was that I kept seeing circling around social media from fan pages and this kind of thing, these memes, was LeBron's going to be the first player ever to win in the in-season tournament, come back from an 0-3 hole and win a championship and all the sort of stuff. Obviously, that wasn't going to happen. But then when he did lose, we got the circulation of the narrative again that MJ had Pippen, LeBron has nothing. And I am tired of that narrative. That is the most ridiculous, revisionist history narrative that you could put out there. And every time I do this, I get flack on social media, but I'm gonna do it. And to be clear, this is not a who's the goat argument. This is not a who's better argument. This is an argument to try to finally put to bed the people that think LeBron has had nothing. Yeah, now in year 21, it's getting harder because, as I said, LeBron James next season is owed $51 million by himself. And yes, the Lakers are one of the more affluent franchises in major American sports, but there are still salary caps, there are still limitations. And when you have one player, I know that player is LeBron James, but when you have one player that at 40 is going to be swallowing up 51 million of that, it's going to be hard to build a winning team. It just is. But I want to try to put the narrative of LeBron has nothing, MJ had Pippen to bed. I know I won't because that's not the way the internet works, but it is a ridiculous narrative. And I want to try to do it by putting to bed another narrative. There's another narrative that MJ played against plumbers and the competition is better in LeBron's era, and maybe it is because that's the way sports science is done. People get stronger and faster as time goes on. That is a fact. But the narrative that MJ played against plumbers and it was so much easier in the 90s is just false. First of all, the 90s was supremely more physical. You could get away with a lot more on defense then than you can now, but that's not even my main point. Last year, the NBA released a top 75 list to celebrate the 75th anniversary of the National Basketball Association. And so I took a look at it in prepping for this episode, and I said, okay, if the league is better now, if the league is faster, stronger, better, then if it's all about MJ had Pippen, LeBron had nobody, then MJ probably has more top 75 teammates, right? Of the top 75 players in NBA history, as decided by the NBA, MJ only had two top 75 teammates, Scottie Pippen and Dennis Rodman. LeBron James had six. And that doesn't include players who didn't make the list. Kevin Love, Chris Bosh, and Kyrie Irving. So with that, you said, well, okay, LeBron needed more because the league is more difficult now because because Michael Jordan played against plumbers, blah, 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 blah. Okay, so if that's the case, if LeBron James' era is harder, if LeBron James' era is better, if LeBron James needed more help in his era, then that means that LeBron had more top 75 opponents than Michael, right? Michael Jordan of the 75, and this includes LeBron James, by the way, because they shared the court in 2003, Michael's last year. Because even though they never crossed paths in an NBA game, they did play in the league together for one season. Michael Jordan had 35 top 75 opponents. There were 35 players on the top 75 list that played in the league at the same time as Michael Jordan. And I can't cross-reference to see every single one that he actually faced off against in a game because I'm only one man. But 35 of the top 75 played in the NBA at the same time as Michael Jordan, including LeBron James. So with the narrative that LeBron's time is better, his era is faster, stronger, shouldn't he have more? LeBron James, including Michael Jordan, had 28. Michael Jordan has won six titles with two top 75 teammates against more top 75 opponents. LeBron James has had six top 75 teammates plus three other really good Hall of Fame level players, teammates, and won four championships against less top 75 players. And I know the argument there is going to be, oh, well, the top 75 list is being made while LeBron James is still in the league and give it another 25, and they'll, the top 100 will outnumber Michael's era. Maybe it will, but we can only look at the top 75. The top 75 greatest NBA players of all time. Michael played with less and played against more than LeBron James and won more titles. Taking it another step further when saying LeBron has nothing, LeBron has had nothing in LA and all this stuff. He's got Anthony Davis. Yes, Anthony Davis is on that top 75 list. He had Russell Westbrook. Yes, Russell Westbrook is on that top 75 list. Carmelo Anthony is on that top 75 list. Dwayne Wade on that top 75 list. One thing I want to touch on, and I know I've brought it up on this podcast before, but it is the most asinine reframing of events that I've ever witnessed. There is a graphic, and I'll put it up on the screen for those that don't remember when I covered this a couple of months ago, that says LeBron won two titles without Dwayne Wade. LeBron won two titles without Bosh. He won three titles without Kyrie. He won three titles without Kevin Love. He won three titles without AD. MJ has won one playoff game without Scottie Pippen. Can we stop that BS? That is the most asinine thing you could have possibly put up trying to discredit Michael Jordan's greatness. Because, yes, LeBron James may have won two titles without Wade and Bosh. He may have won three titles without Kyrie and Kevin Love. And he may have won three titles without AD. But what this graphic does not tell you is that the two titles he won without Wade and Bosh, he was with AD and Kyrie and Love in Cleveland and LA. The three titles he won without Kyrie and Love, he had Bosh and Wade and AD. And the three titles he won without AD, you guessed it, he was with the previous four mentioned. It is the most asinine thing that any pro LeBron person could argue, because that graphic makes it look like LeBron has 10 titles. He's got four. And so to frame it like that means, oh, look how great he is. He didn't need these players to do this. He didn't need these players to do this. He didn't need these players to do this. But what it doesn't say is, as I said, when he wasn't with certain players, he was always with the other players on the list. It is extremely misleading. As I said, this is not a GOAT debate. This is a LeBron has nothing versus MJ had Pippen. Yes, MJ had Pippen. But need I remind you, like, yes, he won one playoff game without Pippen. But to take this a step further, going back to their entire careers. In 1984, when Michael Jordan was drafted to the Chicago Bulls were a circus. The team was not good. The team didn't care about anything other than partying and drugs. And there's a story in the Last Dance documentary about a rookie Michael Jordan showing up to a hotel room that the entire team was partying in, and he knocked on the door, and there was commotion inside, and they opened the door, and they found out it was just Mike, and they're like, oh, it's just Mike, and there was women and drugs and things. Like, there was no culture in Chicago. And so, yes, when you have a group of clowns like that who didn't take basketball seriously and didn't care about anything but drugs, you're not going to win a lot of games. And then they drafted Scottie Pippen. The Chicago Bulls drafted Scottie Pippen to help change the culture in Chicago. Let's not forget that in the grand scheme of things, at a bird's eye view, people now might look at the Chicago Bulls and those six rings and think, oh, they're one of the most historic and best franchises in the NBA. Except that's not true at all. Michael Jordan is the history of the Chicago Bulls. Before him, they were a clown show. After him, with the exception of the Derrick Rose era, they have had virtually no success. So the six titles in the 90s, the Michael Jordan of it all, is the only history, is almost the only history of the Chicago Bulls. I have many friends who are from Chicago but live here now. And when I ask them, Cubs or White Sox? Yeah, passionate. Really, really into it. Bears? Yeah, definitely. Duh, Bears. Soldier Field, love it. The Blackhawks? Yeah, huge fans. None of them ever talk about the Bulls. The Bulls are only a cultural touch point because of the 1990s and because of Michael Jordan. Outside of him, the Bulls are a poverty franchise. Outside of Derrick Rose, the Bulls have had no success without Michael Jordan. Pull out Michael Jordan and Derrick Rose and Jimmy Butler, and the Bulls are historically one of the worst teams in major American sports. Those who want to say, oh, he had Pippen, he had Rodman, it's like, yes, he had Pippen. But again, Pippen was drafted to help Mike. Because, you know, we could talk about that LeBron had more top 75 teammates and all this stuff. But the fact of the matter is, even though it's only 5-on-5, you need another good play. You cannot win by yourself, which is why it took Michael 7 years. Which is why LeBron James, yes, he went to the finals with the Cavs, but it took until going to Miami to win a championship. More on that in a second. But when Michael showed up, the Bulls were terrible. There was no culture of winning, not even close. They had to get Pippen to help start to build something. But it was Michael's mentality that started the shift. And then they drafted Horace Grant, who was their big defensive weapon. And they had Doug Collins, who was a really good coach. And everybody wants to say, like, oh, all the success that Michael had is because of Scotty and Phil. Let's remember, Phil was an assistant to Doug Collins. And when Doug Collins was let go in favor of an innovative assistant to take over, which was Phil Collins, Michael Jordan wasn't happy. But he didn't do what players do now, where I'm not happy, trade me or fire the coach. He played for Phil from 89 to 98. And when Jerry Krause was ready to let Phil go, that's when Michael said, I'm not playing for anybody else. So he went from loving Doug Collins and wanting to play for Doug Collins to accepting the changing of the guard and then not wanting to play for anyone else besides Phil Jackson. LeBron James led teams outside of Eric Spoelstra have switched coaches every couple of years. LeBron, the GM, does not stand pat. And the reason, and I'm a little all over the place on this one, the reason why the Bulls had sustained success is because when it was time to change in the middle of the six championships, Horace Grant signed elsewhere. Other players left, retired. They rebuilt, not with superstars, but with Steve Kerr, Tony Kukoc, Luke Longley. Yes, they went and got Dennis Rodman, but at the time they went and got Dennis Rodman, it was seen similarly to Robert Downey Jr. being hired to play Tony Stark. Looking back on it now, we're like, oh, how could you not make that decision? But at the time, Robert Downey Jr., because of his criminal record and his past, was seen as a gamble of a hire by Marvel Studios. Getting Dennis Rodman was after the Bad Boy Pistons, was after the incident at the arena with a gun, was after all of these things. And he showed up and he still was being Dennis. And so it was far from, oh, we're just going to go grab this great player and all will be peachy. Like, there's a lot of narratives that try to hold LeBron over Mike. And as I said, this is not a GOAT debate. But all those narratives are just not true. It's like, yes, Michael had Pippen, but Pippen was a draft pick because the Bulls built the way you're supposed to. That's why they had sustained success. That's why the Golden State Warriors have had sustained success. That's why the San Antonio Spurs dominated the early 2000s. Sustained success comes when there is consistency. It was Tim Duncan and David Robinson. And then when David Robinson left, they said, oh, here's a couple of international players, Manu, Tony Parker, that bridged the gap. Then when those guys started getting older, it was, oh, here's this young defensive superstar in Kawhi Leonard. Here you go. They filled gaps in the draft. When Horace Grant left, when John Paxson left, when Bill Cartwright left, the Bulls didn't go for the big superstars. They filled the gaps. Steve Kerr, Dennis Rodman, Luke Longley. That is how you have sustained success. There's a reason. There's a reason why the Miami Heat didn't last that long. There's a reason why the Brooklyn Nets with Kevin Durant failed and the Phoenix Suns failed. And it's because sustained success comes from a strong foundation. And when you're taking big swings, signing big players to short contracts for a lot of money, which tears a hole in your bottom line, in your ability to have depth, you cannot sustain that. And so, yes, there was Dennis Rodman and Phil Jackson and Scottie Pippen, but they were there as a result of a slow build. That's why I've said so many times there's a fine line between with the term super team. And that's why I wouldn't necessarily put the Golden State Warriors in it outside of the years they had Kevin Durant, is because all three of their big three were handpicked in the draft and developed. That is the foundation of a dynasty, development. And that is why you have to look really hard at like what makes a dynasty. The Heat only lasted a couple of years and then they were gone. And that's because there was no foundation to keep building around them. And Dwayne Wade was getting older, Chris Bosh was getting less effective, and things fell apart because there was no next man up. There was no filling the gaps. And so this narrative that LeBron James has nothing and Michael played easier competition and he had Scottie and LeBron's got, it's all manipulative. It's all incorrect when you really look at the way it's being framed. Not to mention, like I said, that Michael came in 84 and the Bulls were a crap show. LeBron James came in 03 and the Cavs weren't good. They had the first pick for a reason, but they did have Tony Battee and Carlos Boozer and Zydrunas Ilgauskas in that first year. And those were solid longtime NBA players. Zydrunas Ilgauskas, I think, is one of the most underrated big men in the history of the NBA. Was he great? No. Was he a Hall of Famer? No. But he was a, at that time in the NBA, you needed, that was the era of the big men. And Zydrunas Ilgauskas was a reliable big man. He averaged 13, 7, and 1.5 blocks for his career, but during his years with LeBron James in Cleveland, that was closer to 15 and 8. He was as reliable as they come for a rookie that needed a lot of help, and he certainly had a lot more help on his rookie team than Michael did. Not to mention that LeBron later brought Big Z with him to Miami. So LeBron James was walking into a better situation than Michael Jordan was. So all these narratives are just ridiculous. Can we stop, please? And I'm not here to say, oh, Michael was the GOAT, not LeBron, or LeBron was it. No, it's just, can we ground comparisons in reality? Because the comparisons will never stop. That's just the nature of it. Even though they should, because they're completely different players, the comparisons will never stop. But can we at least ground them in reality? It's like the culture that exists in the history of the Chicago Bulls was only that because of Michael Jordan. They were not good before him. And with the exception of Derrick Rose, they were not good after him, and they're still not. The Cavs, Heat, and Lakers all had success, all had periods of sustained success before LeBron and after LeBron. The Cavs were consistently in the playoffs in the 80s and 90s. No, they never won a championship, but they were there. There's a lot of footage of Michael Jordan beating the Cleveland Cavaliers in the playoffs, including the iconic Craig Elo shot. The Heat, they won a championship with Dwayne Wade and Shaq before LeBron. They're in the playoffs now with Jimmy Butler. And the Lakers are the Lakers. The period of LeBron outside of the 2020 championship is a low point for this franchise. Not the low point. That may have been the first D'Angelo Russell and Julius Erving era during the end of Kobe's career. But these last few years have been kind of a low point because that is a franchise that expects to make deep playoff runs every season. And the period of time with Russell Westbrook was one of the biggest disasters the NBA has seen in recent years. But those franchises will be fine after LeBron. The respect that the Chicago Bulls has today is because of Michael Jordan. Let's not get that twisted. I've talked a really long time on this subject and gone long on some other subjects. The last thing I want to talk about, I want to shift to the NFL to end this. Last week, I talked about the report that Deion Sanders denied that said that he had a list of only six NFL teams that he would allow his sons and Travis Hunter to go to. He said that's not true, whatever. And what I said at the time was when a story comes out, you have to look at the surrounding information. Like when it's a he said they said or he said she said situation, you have to look at the surrounding information when you're deciding whether you want to believe it or not. And when I looked at the surrounding information of that story, of the 15 players transferring out of the program in 17 days, of all the noise that Deion has made, of basically overhauling the program the second he got there, of all the players that were currently there saying, I'm bringing my guys with me, of all the noise, I tend to believe it. Because that's who Deion is. So this week, noise continued when a former Colorado player who was there at the time when Deion Sanders came in and was one of the players that was basically shipped out in favor of the Jackson State players, Xavier Smith, said he never got to know me. He was destroying guys' confidence. Which is probably around the time when he was like, all right, I'm bringing my own guys with me. You guys can go without even trying to see what he had. That's probably what Xavier Smith is talking about. And this came out this week, the last couple of weeks, Xavier Smith saying this. And then Deion's son, Shedeur Sanders, said, I don't even remember him. He must have been mid at best. So throwing an insult at this player that is, based on what we've seen, calling it like it is in the Colorado program. That mid player, Xavier Smith, just signed with the Rams. He's in the NFL. And so this is what I mean when I say look at the source whenever there's a report. And this is going off sports for a minute. In the early days of the Me Too movement in Hollywood, during the pandemic, and a little bit before, there seemingly was a report of bad behavior by just about everyone. And some of those celebrities had their careers ended, and some did not. Because when you hear a lot of stories, not all of them are going to be true. Do I think Tiger Woods had an affair with 19 women? No. But I think he had affairs with some. But when there's an onslaught, it's impossible to weed out which ones are true and which ones are false. You have to take everything into consideration and look at the individual cases and say, which ones do I believe and which ones do I not? And when I do that, you look at the person, you look at their lives, you look at what is happening around them. Are they getting divorced? Are they keeping their jobs? If they're being fired, if their spouse is walking out on them at the time that these reports are coming out, that probably tells you, oh, it's true. These things that are being said are true. Because look at what's happening in their private life. Their wife's walking out. Their husband's walking out. Their children doesn't want to talk to them. They're losing their job and they can't get another one. Or are the reports rolling off their back and disappearing? In the time of Me Too, there wasn't such a thing as agents and people being able to cover it up. If what came out was the truth, you pretty much paid for it. But there were names that were thrown out there, and I'm not going to call anybody out specifically. There were names of celebrities that were thrown out there that have been in the public eye for a long time, that have been at their certain jobs for a long time, that reports came out about this person's name was used in an article about Me Too, and some of those reports very quickly disappeared. The person never lost, some people never lost their jobs, and they never had any other significant stuff. So that kind of stuff is like, okay, maybe that one wasn't true. Maybe that one was just somebody, this particular celebrity catching a stray from somebody thinking that they could get money out of it. Because that's what some of it is. Whenever there's a celebrity scandal, you have to ask yourself, like, did this really happen, or is this person just trying to get money? And so around at the time of the Me Too, there were inevitably some that were false. And so that's why you look at the surrounding situations and you say, what evidence do I have that this is true? Or what evidence do I have that this is not true? And all the evidence we have coming out of the Colorado football program is that they're extremely elitist, and they play favorites to an intense degree. And so this report that he didn't try to get to know me, he didn't do all this, the report of 15 people walking out the door in 17 days, and then Shador Sanders saying this, was like, I don't even know who he is. He must be mid at best, wanting to be on a video game cover in the midst of all this, while being 4-8 on the field. 4-8 on the field. It's not like they were in the playoff. And the expectations for them this year, as I'm sitting here now, I don't think are particularly big. I don't think there's a lot of people predicting them to be in the playoff next year. So there was a exchange on Twitter after the Xavier Smith report, of somebody being like, somebody tweeting at Dion and saying, tell your son to stop acting like he's the coldest thing out here when y'all are 4-8. And Dion responded by saying, he'll be a top five pick. Where your son going? LOL, I got time today. Taking that from the back end first. I got time today. As a D1 coach that's already in some hot water, that's already had your name thrown around, you don't want to be saying things like, I got time today, because people are going to immediately, and they did, jump on and be like, maybe you should use some of that time to recruit. And that's exactly what happened. But Dion saying he'll be a top five pick, where your son going? That is extremely elitist to somebody that's making an accurate observation of Dion's son. It's like he'll be a top five pick, step off. But is Shador Sanders only coachable because that coach is his father? That's what I worried about. He doesn't appear to be humble. Not that Dion was ever known for humility. He seems like a nice guy, but not that Dion was ever known for humility. Shador certainly doesn't seem to have humility. And so I don't think the situation in Boulder is going to get any better, because everything coming out of there is negative. is elitist, is favoritism, is, and it seems like even the players that are there now, like, if your name's not Sanders or you're not tight with a Sanders, you get forgotten. That's why a lot of players, because you could say, like, oh, he threw out a bunch of players when he showed up. It's like, again, I say this offseason when the transfer portal opened, there was an onslaught of departures from Colorado to the point where Shador and Shiloh Sanders had to take to Twitter basically begging people to come to Colorado. Things aren't bright and twinkly in Boulder. Which tells me that not only is there some elitism, not only is there some arrogance in that program, but if your name's not Sanders and you're not tight with the Sanders like Travis Hunter is, they don't seem to care very much. It's not, you see all these programs that are like, we are family, and they win a championship, and you're like, oh, that's a great bunch of guys, and we couldn't have done it without each other, and all this sort of stuff. I don't get any of that out of Colorado. And so with all the reports that come out, like I said, you have to look at the surrounding circumstances whenever news comes out of any kind. And that is why. So I look at the surrounding circumstances of Deion Sanders and his team, and that is why I don't believe him when he says he doesn't have a list of six teams. And that is why I see all this stuff and I'm like, they gotta cool it. And that is why I don't think Dion should have responded to that person on Twitter the way he did, because that person on Twitter is just calling it like he sees it. Colorado was 4-8 last year, and if I'm not mistaken, they started 2-0 or 3-0. The wheels absolutely fell off when they faced real competition, real teams with real culture, real bonds, and a real coach. Sometimes you have to look at the surrounding circumstances. And the surrounding circumstances have not been kind to Deion Sanders and the Colorado Buffaloes football program. That's all I have for you this week. I am Roman Gennaro, host of the Empire Sports Talk podcast. Hey, if you like movies, I started a new YouTube channel with a couple of my friends talking about all things movies and TV. We just released a video today about the 25th anniversary of Star Wars: Phantom Menace. And it being Star Wars Day, head on over to The Real Cinema Squad on YouTube if you love movies. We hope to see you there. But for this podcast today, for Empire Sports Talk, subscribe on YouTube. We have a lot of good content coming out. I'm going to be putting together another Xbox expose as soon as I log off of this episode. Stay tuned for that. This is Roman Gennaro of Empire Sports Talk, signing off. See you next time.